Lisa and Tim, some special guests, and you. Nice team, eh?
Hey, it's Lisa and Tim here. You hear us weekday avos from 4 for your drive home on the radio, on the FM wireless.
Yes, but the internet has allowed not only for cat videos, but for podcasts of us. All the best bits jam-packed up nicely and packaged and in a cast.
I hope it's as entertaining as those cat videos. Here's some of the best bits now.
Well, it seems to me parenting guides are quite regularly described as such and such as hilarious new parenting guides. It's always hilarious, never stomach-testingly unsavoury on occasion with the likelihood of throwing up in your mouth high. But when the guide is called Shit on My Hands, it really needs to be hilarious, otherwise it would be classified as a birth control. And the author, Madeline Hamilton, is with us today. Hello, Madeline.
Hello, Lisa.
Oh, the hilarious new parenting guide, I'm going to say it again, Shit on My Hands, will leave a smile on your face. Frank and funny.
Congratulations on the title for a start.
Yes.
Thank you very much. It was actually the woman I wrote it with, she had a Facebook status update which said, upside of parenting, pure love, downside, shit on my hands.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you had any incidents yourself which you kind of went, yep, I can immediately relate to that?
Or you mean today?
Yeah, every day. Yeah. The most recent was my husband overdosed our two-year-old on prune juice, and we've been living with the chaotic consequences.
Oh, messy.
Lord. I've had a puppy that had a similar problem, and I know that was ugly. Yeah. It's a gorgeous little book. I love it. And I so often just flick open a book on a page and see what's there. And what I opened on today when I looked at this is the page that says, unless you've previously had a predilection for bondage and discipline, pregnancy and birth will be the first experience you have of relinquishing control and accepting your future is now in the hands of another human being. And the most daunting aspect of reproduction is the question, what if? And for a number of people, the what if becomes what now? For some, it becomes what the... So, Madeline, how do you propose that people handle it?
Our motto is knowledge is power. So don't go into it all thinking, la-di-da-di-da, everything's going to be absolutely fabulous. Mm. Read our book, rather read as much information as you can, quiz every other parent you know about all the upsides and the downsides, because mm-hmm. it can be quite a shock. Because we're not raised now with, dozens of siblings. We have no idea what a baby does or is until we actually have one thrust into our arms after the birth.
Yeah, well, you're obviously tackling the messy outcomes that can happen, like poop on my hands, and I noticed there's a
section.
Spew
down your back, that'll be the next one.
Whole section on vomit as well, which was pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. But, we recommend acquiring a full body condom. So.
But there's also advice on behaviours that you might expect as well, like tantrums and the terrible twos and so forth.
Yes, we'd like to think that we offer parents tips because, your child will not be immune from tantrums no matter how well you raise it. It's still going to lose his or her marbles in the supermarket.
Mm-hmm. It's how they learn, isn't it? I mean, it's how they learn to choose their battles, as they say.
Very true. And you need to choose your battles as a parent too.
Yeah, I reckon that would be the first thing you've got to do.
Yeah.
I love the way it's laid out as well, 0 to 6 months, 6 to 12 mm-hmm. months. Starting with, as you said, you don't know what to do with this thing that's placed in your hand. You don't even know how to hold it. Do I put my hand behind its neck? It starts with bathing, naming, extreme parenting. Pink. What is the chapter there about? Is that stereotype mm-hmm. pink?
Yes. Well, parents of girls or parents who are expecting a baby girl expect to have buckets and buckets and boxes of pink things given to you. And you may not like pink, but you're going to have to live with it for quite a few years. And as your baby turns into a toddler, then a three-year-old, it's going to get worse and worse and worse. Hopefully at some stage she'll let the pink go.
Yes.
Now, we'd mentioned just a moment ago, Lisa was saying that obviously this little monster that you've bred is going to take over your whole life. Mm-hmm. But you've got to make sure that you still have some, shall we say, adult time.
Yeah.
And I noticed that there's a section on sex after the baby. For mum, is that for dad as well?
Hopefully, although he might not want to have some quiet time in the shower for 6 weeks.
So true.
And just leave mum alone for a little while. Let her recuperate. Let her stitches heal. Yeah. You know, give her a break and let
those
her
things,
come
back. Those things, they're for the baby, they're lunch, yes.
Exactly, exactly. And plus there's going to be a baby in the way, attached to the boob, probably constantly.
Yes. And I would recommend this book for husbands as well, yes. Fathers, I should say.
Absolutely. That's we wrote it for men just as much as women, because so many baby books are just targeted at women and they're all pastel pink and all lovey-dovey looking and they don't speak to blokes at all. So hopefully we've used the right language and the right to look and tone
absolutely.
For dads as well.
Baby butt on the cover, ready to blow.
Exactly. Ready to blow. At least it's got a nappy on.
Yeah.
Have you had some good feedback? Have you had some new parents perhaps come up and go, hey, you know what, that was actually really helpful?
Yes, yes. Some people say that our book should be given to you in the maternity ward.
Wow.
Yeah. What a brilliant idea.
Yeah, oh, I think so.
Well, it's such a much better gift than a basket of either pink or blue balloons and something, God. You know, hanging off a stick for a new mum. Yes. I recommend it, A Down and Dirty Companion to Early Parenthood. Can I do it again?
Well, let's call it...
What am I, 9? Shit on my hands.
Yeah, there you go.
Yay.
We'll use the bleep button and everything will be fine.
Madeline, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Are you all set now?
You
ready? Yeah, you're feeling clucky?
I'm all ready to take it on, Madeline, if I can just find the right woman.
Yes, you have been warned. Yeah.
Thanks, Madeline.
Thanks, guys.
Interesting today, all the talk around Perth, around Western Australia, about people just basically disowning Rolf Harris, plaques, artworks and so forth following the guilty verdict in his trial overnight. Last night our time in the UK, 12 counts of indecent assault he's been found guilty of, and a backlash already all around WA.
It's literally been described online as the de-Rolfication of Perth, starting with where he went to school, Perth Mod, taking the pictures off the walls. A footpath, I believe, is going to be torn up in Bassendean.
Yeah, there's a plaque next to it as well. Yeah.
Yep, and any other references.
Yeah, so it's got us thinking. Obviously, he's well known as an entertainer, but also as an artist.
He's
done a portrait of the Queen, for God's sake.
A couple.
So, you know, he's very well known as an artist. We've got David Hume from Banziger Hume Fine Arts on to tell us what's going to maybe happen to Rolf's artwork in terms of value and so forth from this point on. Hello, David.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
This is interesting and unprecedented sort of territory here, isn't it?
Well, I don't know whether it's unprecedented. I think with Rolf's work, he is primarily known as an entertainer, and I think like many entertainers, he also paints, and I think that's part of him. You know, there are many other well-known celebrities, if you like, but that have also painted and gone down that path and had regular exhibitions. He's not alone in that regard.
Would a Rolf painting that you're aware of, or artworks that you're aware of, be worth a considerable amount of money, or is he only kind of mediocre in the art world?
I think he's certainly well represented in England than he is here. Okay. And I think often large works from the 60s will come up, which he painted on large doors, and for his television series, which he did, and these quite large works, they will sell at auction, but generally not for very large sums. But they had started to pick up a little bit of momentum in the auction room in the last few years, actually, where they'd been selling for perhaps $4,000 to $6,000 for one of those works, and certainly the highest price at auction for one of his paintings is just under $10,000, which was about 3 years ago.
He's sort of a performance artist, really. I mean, a giant Mr. Squiggle. He used to, you know, do the things on as he paint Wally Wedge.
I think his market. I mean, it's his gallery market, which will be completely depressed now, and nobody, unfortunately, will want to probably buy one of his works from a gallery, and that's probably more so in England than anywhere else.
Did you have a client yourself recently who you gave some advice about a Rolf?
Yes, absolutely. Lady contacted me, and she said somebody had offered her a good sum for one of these large scale works, and she'd only paid a few hundred dollars for it.
Mm-hmm.
And in view of the court case, I said to her, look. I think it's a very good deal. If the person really wants this thing, I think it would be good to sell it to them if they really want it, because she'd been offered $4,000 and then it went up to $6,000, and I said, look, you know, that's a good deal. You've got no selling costs. That's, you know, that's a good offer, so I would take it.
And do you think things could, I mean, this is the reaction today, of course, do you think things could change in the future? A lot of pretty ordinary people have done famous works of art, like John Wayne Gacy, serial killers, the Cray twins.
Yeah, notorious people.
The infamy of it.
Even Adolf Hitler has got artworks out there that are worth a lot of money, hasn't he?
To be sure. I mean, obviously, people, I'm often asked for the prices of Chopper Reed's paintings. I don't really want anything to do with them, to be honest. I just don't think... I think their celebrity outweighs the quality of their art a lot of the time. And certainly Adolf Hitler was not a very good painter, I have to say. And a lot of his angst, I think, was caused by the fact that he wasn't very good. Mm. His paintings do come up for sale occasionally. They would sell for up to $10,000 for one of his paintings, more from a curiosity point of view than value. Mm. Having said that, Winston Churchill is regarded extremely highly as an artist. He was a very, very accomplished artist against everything else that he did. And one of his paintings, you won't believe this, but one of his paintings in 2007 at auction at Sotheby's in London sold for over £1 million.
Wow. That is pretty interesting. David, unfortunately, we'll have to leave it there, but we appreciate the information on what may possibly happen to Rolf's artworks as we progress from what is probably the worst day in his artistic history today.
Yeah, I know. I followed him all my life, so I'm very, very saddened by the whole thing.
It is very horrible.
Thanks very much, David.
Thank you, David.
David Hume from Banzinger Hume Fine Arts. And definitely keep an eye on the Rolf Harris story as it continues to break.
The comedy, the drama, the substance, the nonsense.
Whatever could you mean?
So many shows, just one.
Who's that handsome guy?
Justin Hamilton.
Yeah, that handsome guy is our movie and TV guru, Justin Hamilton. G'day.
Oh, g'day. Look, so many shows, right?
Yes, and only one remote.
And it usually comes down to a battle to who controls that remote.
Indeed.
You know, it's something that was a big hit last year, and, you know, sometimes this kind of thing happens and you're just left in the dark as to why it worked so well, was the TV series Under the Dome. Yeah. And there's a part of me that kind of goes, you know, like the network executives are still excited by... reality TV and things like that. So I thought, oh, well, this has got a, you know, high concept, so that's a good idea. You know, I like that it's based on a Stephen King novel, and Lisa, you're a fan of King as well.
I read the book. I was looking forward to the series.
Right. Mm. And did you watch?
I haven't watched it yet, actually.
Yeah. It's all
it's
just...
It's going to be a binge weekend, I think, I hope, or what's going to be...
I don't know. It's all a little bit, huh? Yeah. You know, when you're just watching something and it's like, and you know, like as the season progressed, the ratings maintained, and you could smell the executives going, oh, you know what, this would have made a great limited series. Let's turn it into an ongoing series.
Oh,
and you go,
dear.
I don't know if it has enough to, you know, be able to do that. So, look, for anyone who missed it and has no idea what the show is about and might think that the title of the show is a metaphor, it's not. It literally is what it says it is. It's Under the Dome, a whole city is cut off from the outside world, and nobody knows why the dome is there. They think maybe it's a military experiment gone wrong, maybe it's from outer space, maybe it's the supreme powers of Tony Abbott kicking in to keep the boat people out. Like, who knows, right? We don't know where this is going. So... It's got a little bit of the stink of the Simpsons movie as well. Like, they both kind of came out at the same time. Remember the Simpsons movie?
They did the dome.
So, oh dear. Look, I just could not get into this, and I tried. You know when you really want to like something, you think, oh, the pedigree is here, I am going to invest in this. It's also got Dean Norris, who was one of our favourite actors from Breaking Bad. He was Hank, for anyone who doesn't recognise the name. So I was pumped to see him in a new role, and he gets to play the evil mayor, but the series is just a little bit ridiculous, and you just, like, don't get me wrong, I don't mind ridiculous, but there's just not enough substance to make the ridiculous be palatable, I think.
Sometimes ridiculous reads better.
Oh, I totally agree. You know, you can read about a space alien with tentacles and 15 eyes and wearing, you know, tassels on its jacket. But then when you see it, you look and you go, this is ridiculous, right?
Is that a new character you're developing or something, is it, mate?
Look, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but keep an eye out for it. But look, it's because I love Dean Norris, I kept trying to watch it and thinking, oh, he'll be the guy that gets me through this series. But it's I don't know. It's like giving me a serve of chocolate and failing to tell me it's been mixed with sardines. Like, don't get me wrong, I'll keep eating because I love chocolate, but I hate the experience the whole time, right? So, and then when you kind of think that at the end of last season, it was like, oh, is this show not ridiculous enough? And then there was like an egg that was hatched, and then the mayor was about to hang a male character called Barbie. Yeah, that's confusing. Mm-hmm. And wow. Then, anyway, so I went into this new episode because the first episode of the new season is written by Stephen King. So I thought,
really?
Oh, that's cool. And, you know, he makes a sweet cameo, and I love him. He was a big part of my childhood, and, you know, I think I still find his books to be fantastic. But, oh, Lord, what is going on with this series? One of the problems is the Dome isn't defined by what it can do. Like, at this point, the Dome can do anything, and that just makes it, like, you don't know what the rules are.
No.
So you're sitting there going, is the Dome keeping people out? Is the Dome trying to affect people? Will the Dome serve me a latte? What is going on with the Dome? Why has the Dome got tattoos? Like, it's just a little bit confusing. And I don't think they've actually worked out what the Dome is yet.
Haven't they read the book?
Well, I don't know if they have.
Didn't it finish last season? I mean, that's what's weird.
I know. So, look, I watched this first episode of the second season, and I thought, well, you know what, maybe it'll have had that, you know, gotten all the wrinkles out of it, and maybe this will be fantastic. And then it was just like, nah, I just don't care about the Dome. I don't care about the mystery, and all the actors overact. And, look, I wanted to like this, and I attempted to invest, and then I thought, I'm taking my money out, because when this crashes, I don't want to lose everything. And that's as far as I'm going to go with that metaphor. So Under the Dome, Channel 10, 8:30 p.m. on Tuesdays. No thumbs hoping for a Dome cut.
Oh, should have put snow in it and been able to shake it.
Then it would have looked at least pretty, right?
Yeah.
Movies on Thursday, Just. What have you got coming up?
Oh, well, you know what? I say I didn't enjoy Under the Dome, and I say that very sadly. We're going to be talking about Transformers Age of Extinction. Have a think where that one's going to go.
Oh.
It'll be fun talking about it, though. We'll catch you then.
Yes, looking forward to it.